I wasn't sure what I was going to talk to you about today. And a suggestion has been put to me by a couple of people that maybe we should talk about the organization of church. Well, as Christian Scientists, we should all look to our impersonal pastor for the answers about anything. And if the question nearest our heart right now is the Christian Science Church or organization, the answer is in the lesson sermon. And I think the answer in this week's sermon is particularly good. And I just want to read a bit of it to you. The same day went Jesus out of the house and sat by the seaside. And great multitudes were gathered together unto him, so that he went into a ship and sat. And the whole multitude stood on the shore. And the disciples came and said unto him, Why speakest thou unto them parables? He answered and said unto them, Because it is given unto you to know the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it is not given. Therefore speak I to them in parables, because they, seeing, see not, and hearing, they hear not, neither do they understand. But blessed are your eyes, for they see, and your ears, for they hear. Another parable put he forth unto them, saying, The kingdom of heaven is likened unto a man which sowed good seed in his field. But when men slept, his enemy came, and sowed tares among the wheat, and went his way. But when the blade was sprung up and brought forth fruit, then appeared the tares also. So the servants of the householder came and said unto him, Sir, didst not thou sow good seed in thy field? From whence then have the tares? He saith unto them, An enemy hath done this. The servant said unto him, Wilt thou then that we go and gather them up? But he said, Nay, lest while ye gather up the tares, ye root up also the wheat with them. Let both grow together until the harvest. And in the time of harvest, I will say to the reapers, Gather ye together first the tares, and bind them in bundles to burn them, but gather the wheat into my barn. Now I think that's a beautiful answer for what's happening in our church, and I want to share with you what Dumelo has to say about this. I'm sure you're all familiar with Dumelo, are you? Good. Well, I haven't read it for a while, but I remembered that once I had read his interpretation of this and loved it so much that I wanted to read it again. Now he said, the parable of the tares is one of the greatest, most characteristic, and most fruitful of all the parables. In it, Christ looked from the present into the distant future. He foresaw that scandals and offenses would soon arise, which would cause great searchings of heart. The denial of Peter, the treachery of Judas, the deceit of Ananias, the quarrels among the apostles, the parties in the church, the sensuality of the Corinthians, the treachery of false brethren and false teachers, the falling away of some, the love of others waxing cold. And looking further over the later history of his church, he saw a saddening picture of low morality, low ideals, avarice, ambition, disunion, and seeming failure. Therefore he warned his disciples beforehand that thus it must be, that in the visible church the evil must be ever mingled with the good,
and that earnest men must not lose heart, nor be impatient, because they cannot make the church as pure as they would have it. This parable is interesting from the light it throws upon our Lord's person. He is the chief character throughout and is endowed with divine attributes. He is the householder, the sower of the seed, the antagonist of Satan, the Lord of the world. The angels are his ministers and do his bidding. In the kingdom of heaven, he is the king and has the power to doom to heaven and hell. Christ himself interprets the parable. The kingdom of heaven in this parable, as often, is identified with the church on earth, regarded as a visible society embracing both good and evil. While men slept, this detail may indicate the subtlety of the evil one in introducing evil into the church in ways that cannot be traced. His enemy. By no more striking expression could the greatness of the power of Satan be indicated than by this, that he is described as the antagonist of Christ himself. Tares, or bastard wheat, so much like true wheat, that until the corn is in the ear, the two cannot be distinguished. Hence any attempt to root up the tares would result in rooting up the wheat also. So in the church, any attempt to distinguish between true and false Christians is doomed to failure. Well, you know, that says it all. That has the perfect answer. And if we really search the Bible and the writings of Mary Baker Eddy for our answers, rather than looking to people and personalities, we'll get the true answers. Someone at the meeting we had last night said that so many things seem to be wrong in Boston, and people are praying about it, and yet there are no answers. Now, that is not true. There's wonderful things happening. As I have traveled, and I'm grateful that I have traveled, I have met so many wonderful teachers, practitioners, lecturers, ex-lecturers, who are working now like they haven't done for years. And I feel that we are living in a very exciting period. And how we handle this situation is very important. You can't fight error with error. Christian scientists can't, because our Master told us we have to love our enemies. Pray for those who despitefully use you and persecute you. Pray for them. Because if we believe that we have enemies and that people are ruining our church, we are believing in a power apart from God. Our church is God's church. It's not even Mrs. Eddy's church. This revelation was revealed to Mrs. Eddy, and Mrs. Eddy was ready for it. And she helped establish this church, but she did it every step of the way through prayer and dedication. And this church is founded upon the rock. And nothing can shake that. And our only responsibility is to be so absolutely confident of that, that we will not be afraid, and that we will not indulge in gossip and slander. Our church was organized to a church. Mrs. Eddy said she wanted a church organized to commemorate the word and works of our Master. They were Mrs. Eddy's own words. She didn't say she wanted a church to commemorate her word and works, to commemorate the word and works of our Master. And how familiar are we with the word and the works of our Master? Are we not so busy commemorating the words and the works of human beings and what they are doing or what they're not doing, that we have lost the way? And that's what evil, impersonal evil, is trying to do. It would use us all so that it would paralyze good, as Mrs. Eddy says, in ways that are vain. The aim of animal magnetism is to paralyze good and give activity to evil. And that's what evil does. It paralyzes the good. And in one of my lectures, I talk about the paralysis of analysis. There's nothing more paralyzing than analyzing the problem and chewing it over and thinking about it and talking about it to other people. That is keeping us from our work, which is to know the truth for us and for our world and for our movement. And I know it's not always easy to do that. It's easier to go along with the crowd, but we have to follow the shepherd and not the sheep. If we're following the sheep, we're in danger. Our movement's in danger. Our movement is us. It's not the board of directors in Boston or all the people who work there. It's us. The word church is spelt C-H-U-R-C-H. You are is right in the middle of church. You are church. So if that church in Boston was dissolved tomorrow, we are still church in action. We have to see that church is in action in all our activities, because church is whatever rests upon and proceeds from divine principle, whatever. When I first became a Christian Scientist, a practitioner in our church told me a lovely story about a little boy, aged about 3 and a half, who came to their Sunday school one Sunday, and he was crying. And the teacher asked him what was wrong, and he said, "I hate Sunday school. I hate church, and I hate Sundays." The teacher said, "Why? Why do you hate it?" He said, "Because every Sunday my mommy and my daddy have a big fight. My daddy doesn't want to go to church. He wants to go and play golf. And my mommy wants to go to church. So we have a big row, and then when we go home after church, we have another big row over lunch." So he said, I don't like coming here. I don't want to come back, because they had a big row today." So she was really praying for an answer to get to this little boy. So she got out the textbook and she read the definition of church: whatever rests upon and proceeds from divine principle. And she said to this little boy, "Do you know that the game of golf proceeds from and rests upon divine principle? That all the qualities that you need to play golf, such as patience and accuracy and stability and intelligence and wisdom and care for the people who are playing with you, these are spiritual qualities. So your daddy is in church while he's on the golf course." Well, this little boy was so impressed, he immediately stopped crying, and the next Sunday he was brought to church by his daddy. And his daddy brought him into Sunday school and said, "I just had to come to a church that taught my child the true meaning of church." He said, "I willingly gave up golf this morning," and he became a member of the church. And isn't that nice? You know, we think if somebody's not at church, why are they not here? And we begin to wonder and think about it and gossip about it as to why they're not here. And maybe they're demonstrating church right where they are. I was taught a lesson about that too. Some years ago, there was a member of our church, and she had two young children. And at each business meeting and each inspirational meeting and each pre-lecture meeting, she never showed up. And one time she asked me to give her some help, and she had asked me to come to her home and visit her. And I was to go after our pre-lecture meeting at church. It was quite a long drive to her house, and my friend was driving me. And all the way down there in the car, I kept saying to my friend, she wouldn't have these problems if she would go to church, if she would come to these meetings. She wouldn't have these problems. Well, when we got to her house, her husband opened the door and he said, she hasn't come home yet. She's at a parents' meeting. And he said, but she won't be long. So I sat there and I was thinking, oh, yes, you can go to parents' meetings, but you can't make it to the church meetings. And this young woman came in and her face was flushed and she looked so happy and excited. She said, I must tell you about the most wonderful demonstration I made today. She was the chairman of the board of this parents' association. And they had appointed a woman to be treasurer. And this woman had spent all the money. And so my friend was asked to take care of this. And they were having a board meeting that night. And this woman was being brought in, and the board were all to talk to her about this problem and to see how she was going to pay this money back and so forth. And my friend began to pray about it. And she said she'd been praying for several weeks. And she went to the woman's house that day and she found out that this woman's husband had left her and her children. Well, he went with another woman. He had left her without food, without money. And the only money she had was this money and she was forced to use it. And she thought she'd be able to pay it back before she was found out, but she was found out. And on that day she went and told her brother the whole story. And her brother immediately gave her the money to pay back. And I was so ashamed that I was thinking, if only she was at the meeting, if she was in church, when she was demonstrating divine principle and love right where she was. It really humbled me, and it helped me to see afterwards that I'm not always right. A man in our church used to give long testimonies, and they were more like a sermon than a testimony. And every time he got up, people would fidget about, and there was never anything in it about healing. And I remember thinking to myself, he missed his vocation, he should have been a preacher because of these. But one night, he got up and he gave his testimony as usual, and I was feeling agitated, and so were other people. And I had had a patient for 3 months, and she wasn't getting on very well with her problem. The next morning, this woman called me, and she said, Myrtle, I was healed last night at the church service. And I said, that's great news, thank God for that. She said, do you know what healed me? Mr. So-and-so's testimony. So I learned a big lesson from that one as well, that any testimony given in the church may not appeal to some of us, but it's meeting a need somewhere, and it certainly met that woman's need. So that one was an eye-opener for me. Another church story I would like to tell you happened to me when I lived in Malta, and I'm telling you this one because this healing has always stood out to me like a beacon light to show me that this is the way you pray for church problems, no matter how bad they seem to be. When I went to live in Malta, my husband was in the Royal Marines and he was stationed over there. We were living there for 2 years. I was a very new student of Christian Science. I'd just taken membership in the Belfast Church before I moved there. And the person who was first reader at the church was a wonderful Christian Scientist. And I used to have lunch with her every Thursday, and she would talk to me about Christian Science. And this was the highlight of my life. And I honestly wanted to be like this woman. I modeled myself on. I thought she was a model Christian Scientist and wondered if I would ever be good enough to be like her. Well, one day my husband told me that on the following Sunday there was to be a church parade for the Marines, and his commanding officer had told the men, "We want your wives and families here on Sunday morning." So I said, all right, I would go. And I really didn't know that you shouldn't call a reader on a Wednesday. I was such a new student. And I called this woman to tell her I wouldn't be at church. And she nearly hit the roof. And she said, "How dare you call me on a Wednesday morning?" She said, "That is animal magnetism using you." Well, really, I couldn't understand it. I really and truly couldn't. I couldn't understand it was coming from this person who was so dear to me. And then I told her that I wouldn't be at church on Sunday. Well, my goodness, she really let fire then. And she told me I was not a Christian Scientist, and it was obvious that I had taken membership in the Mother Church too soon, and I should not be a member. She said, "You are our only Sunday school teacher, and your two children are our only pupils, and we need you there." Well, I was so upset that I couldn't believe the disappointment in this person. And I thought, well, if all Christian Scientists are like that, I'm going to leave this church. I don't want to be a Christian Scientist. I can forget it. So I didn't go to church on the Wednesday night, and I didn't go on the Sunday, but I was so upset that I kept bursting into tears because I had waited for 2 years to become a member of a Christian Science church. I had tried to live up to everything that was required of me to be that member, and I thought it was a privilege to be a Christian Scientist. And now it looked like this whole thing was just turned around, and I didn't know whether to leave the church or not. Anyhow, I began to pray about it, and I read Mrs. Eddy's article on loving your enemies and another one called Taking Offense. And after I read that, I wrote my friend a letter. And I said, "I am sorry if this disagreement has broken up our relationship because it meant an awful lot to me. But I am not sorry for what I did." And oh, I forgot to tell you that she came to my house the following Sunday. I went to the parade with my children, and she came to our house after church. And boy, she let me have it because I wasn't there. So then the next week I wrote this letter to her. And the next thing was, a few days later, I got a terrible letter from her in which she said she had been swimming with her husband and she hit her head on the edge of the pool. And she said she knew it was malpractice and she didn't know where it was coming from. But when she got home and read my letter, she knew where it was coming from. Well, I couldn't believe it. I didn't know what malpractice was, what it was all about, or what mercy meant. Well, the day after that, the other five families from the church, there were only six families, the other five families came to visit me. And they said, "We have missed you at church." And they said that this person had told them what I had done and that they were all on my side. They said, "You did exactly the right thing." Well, I was so pleased to hear that, I burst into tears, and then I showed them this letter. And one of these men took the letter and he said, "Would you mind if I send that to Boston? Because," he said, "we really feel that that woman should not be in our desk, but we don't know how to get her out." And for a minute I was tempted, and then I remembered that the church manual said a branch church shall work out their own problems. So I said to him, "No, I think we have to work out our own problem in this case, and I think I'll have to keep on doing that." So they said they would pray about it too. Well, the following Tuesday night, I couldn't sleep. And I got up and I was reading the lesson sermon at 3:30 in the morning. And there was a story in it from the New Testament. And it said, whom say ye that I am? So I began to ask myself about that. Who did I say that I was? And I kept thinking, well, she says I'm a bad Christian Scientist, and she said this, that, and the other. But the thought came, but whom say ye that I am? So I asked myself that, and I said, Father, who do you say that I am? And the lovely answers kept flooding in, that I was his beloved child, and that he saw no sin and no harm in me, and that wherever I was about my Father's business, that I was always doing everything that was good and right in his sight. And I began to feel so happy and so at peace that I thought the work must be done. And I went to get up out of my chair when suddenly it was like somebody pushed me back down and said, just a minute, Myrtle. Who does God say that she is? And I said, well, that's her problem. She's an experienced Christian Scientist, and let her figure that one out. But the little voice wouldn't let me away with it. It said, Myrtle, that's not the way you do it. You can't enter the kingdom of heaven alone. Now, who does God say that she is? I said, just God's perfect child. And the wee voice said, no, that's no good. That's not the way you said it about yourself. Remember how loving you were to yourself? Well, it took me about 20 minutes to find it for me, but it took me about 3 hours to find it for her. But I tell you, when I did, I loved my friend like I had never loved her. I saw her as God saw her, and honestly, I loved her. And suddenly I understood what had happened to her. She was a reader in an all-Catholic country, and she was standing in the desk. And I suddenly realized why we should have been praying for her and protecting her. That dear woman didn't know what had hit her, and she was only being handled, and this was nothing to do with her. And I loved her. I couldn't wait to the next night to go to church. And when I went to church, she was reading a beautiful lesson on love. And she looked like, she had lovely white hair, and she looked like there was a halo right round her head. And when she had stopped reading, she came down the steps and came away up the back of the church. And she and I embraced, and all the members were in tears. And she said to me, will you be up for lunch tomorrow, as usual? And I said, yes. And I went, and we never discussed it. We never even thought about it. We never said, why did you do that, or how did you work about it? Or we just picked up from where we left. And she and I corresponded for 25 years. So if we want to heal, we have to heal through love. There's no other way. I don't know any other way. We can get angry, we can say things, we can write letters, we can do all sorts of things, but it won't heal, and it won't help. We've all got to get down to the truth that only what God knows about everyone is true, and that includes every one of them. God has no favorites. We're not better in God's eyes than anybody else, and nobody else is better in God's eyes than we are. So we have to see that to help our world, because we are spiritual pioneers, and we're setting the pace for world thought. So if we want world thought to change and wars to stop all over the world, we have to stop this little war right here where we are. We have to defuse the situation. Take the fuse out of the explosions and the bombs by loving. And in that way, we'll bless ourselves, our families, our churches, our movement. And our movement will start moving. 2 weeks ago, I was in Texas, and I heard a talk by a wonderful Indian man whose father had been a close friend of Gandhi's. And his talk was all on change. And he said all the problems in the world today, in the Middle East and Ireland and Bosnia, all these countries, are because of people's reluctance to change. And he said it has to start with us. We have to start breaking it down. He said that which refuses to change is already dead. And he talked about the dance. And he said how wonderful and beautiful dancing is, but if there never was a twist or a turn in the dance itself would be boring. Isn't that a nice thought? It made me think, you know, do we sit in the same pew every Sunday and hate it when somebody takes our seat? Do we eat the same thing for breakfast every morning? Have we had our hair in the same way for 35 years? You know, are we willing to change even in little ways? So he said, change is a sign of life. Anybody who's willing to change is living. So if we want to live, we have to change. Change our thought. Not try to change people. Change our thought about people, about what we are thinking about them. When one of my daughters was very, my youngest child, was very little, she hated being younger than the rest of her family. She always wanted to be doing what they were doing. And she would go about the house and everything I asked her to do, she would say, I can't, and I won't, and I'm too wee, too little. She was always saying she was too wee. Well, one day I was baking a pie, and it was winter, it was getting dark, it was this sort of a day, and she came into the kitchen, my hands were all flour, and she said, Mommy, will you tie my laces? And I said, Tracy, my hands are all flour. And I said, go over and switch on the kitchen light. She said, no, I can't, and I won't, and I'm too wee. And I stood like this in the kitchen, and I said, Tracy, I can't and I won't belong to error, and you are God's child, and I can is the son of I am. And she was only 3 and a half, and she looked away up at me and she said, okay, Mommy, I can and I will. And she sat down on the floor and she tied her laces. And then she came over and she got my rolling pin and she stood on her tiptoes and she switched on the light and she said, I can, Mommy, and I will. And for about a month, she went round the house saying, I can and I will. And she became the most independent of all my children. So when her sisters would say to her, no, you can't come with us, Stuart, you're too wee, she would say, I can and I will. So I don't know if that was always such a good thing. But she was willing to change, and I had to change my thinking about her. Now, I think we should open this to questions now. Good. Have you got the first question, dear?
No, I'm ready for it.
I'm very familiar. We're very familiar with your lecture on environment. And what are the other lectures that you have given? The other things you have talked about?
One is on peace. It is called There Is No Way to Peace. Peace is the way. Another one is entitled Moral Courage. And the last one was called Neither Villains Nor Victims. Which is very good. Have you not got any of those tapes here? You have some? Good. Good.
Are they all on tape?
Yes. Yes, different places like this have taped them, you know. Does that answer your question?
I was a lecture chairman in the South, and we, I was just the lecture chairman in the South, and we had your radio program on our environment,
all right.
Changing environment. And I taped it from there, and I have probably listened to it and retaped it for many people, so it's been sped all over from my taping of your radio program.
Oh, that's nice. Thank you. Yes, it's wonderful, the places that those tapes have been. When I was first asked to let a church tape my lecture, I didn't like the idea at all. But now I am so grateful, because those tapes, they're all over the world, and I hear such wonderful stories. A woman was telling me just a few days ago that her brother was an alcoholic, and he was in Alcoholics Anonymous, and he didn't want anything to do with Christian Science, and she had taken my tape to him and said, please, just listen to this tape. And he was so impressed and loved it so much that he took it to the meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it was played there. And another time, when I lived in Belfast, as you know, we have many, many army living there, soldiers, thousands of them, for 24 years. And I used to say in my church it was sad that we never saw any soldiers at our church or at our lectures. Out of all these thousands, we never saw any. But another lecturer was telling me that her son, her daughter, had a boyfriend who was an officer in the army and stationed in Northern Ireland. And one day, a landmine blew up 8 of his men. And he was not a Christian Scientist. And this girl, who was a Christian Scientist, was trying to comfort him. And she called her mother, who was then in Boston, and she said, I just don't know how to comfort him, how to reach him. And her mother said, well, I do. And she sent my tape on our true environment. And that tape was played in the army barracks. And the soldiers said it was almost worn out. Everybody wanted to borrow it. They said they loved it all, but they disagreed with one point, and that was that I forgave the IRA. And they said, we feel we can't do that. And she said, keep playing the tape. Wasn't that wonderful to know that that had reached that far? There's someone else.
Will you speak to this subject of forgetting as related to forgiving?
Well, I don't know that I fully understand your question. When we forgive, we should forget. But there are times when it's well to remember. For instance, I had to forgive my husband, who beat me a lot and knocked me around for years and drank and went with other women, and I had to forgive him. But if I had forgotten, I wouldn't be sitting here today. So I've forgotten in the way that if I tell my story now, it's like telling somebody else's story. It doesn't hurt anymore. But I think that sometimes it's good to remember, because you don't know who else that you can help through that story. So I'm not sure if that's what you were getting at.
It's just that I've heard so often that you have not truly forgiven unless you've forgotten the whole thing. I can forgive, but I sometimes can't forget.
Yeah, well, I haven't forgotten the things that happened in my experience, but I've truly forgiven.
Thank you.
But doesn't that kind of go along with the idea? Sometimes you love a person, but you don't like what they're doing at all.
That's right. You don't like what they're doing.
Because they're beating you up. And
right.
Beating.
But you must love the person. You know, I loved my husband with a love that was not of this earth. It was nothing to do with me. I learned to do that. I mean, there were times when I could have seen him any place and wished that bad things would happen to him. But through that experience, I really had to learn to forgive. And when I did that, I loved him with such a compassion that when he died last year, I helped to nurse him for the last year of his life. And I even took his funeral service because he didn't have a friend in the world. Not even his brother or sisters came to his funeral. And I was able to take his funeral service and remember all the nice things about him. And there were many nice things about him. And I'm grateful to say I was able to do that and do it with love, because it was good for my children who might have went through years of hating and resenting. But I told them in that last year that he was their father, and they had to learn to love, and they did. And they're grateful for that too.
Our church in Levittown will be having a spiritual goals meeting on church, the joys of serving church. So I'm so glad I'm here to share some of the thoughts that you shared with us. And I wonder if I might have the reference from Demolos, which I think is a good
pick-or. That's from Matthew chapter 13.
That's the tares and the wheat?
Yes, the tares and the wheat. Matthew 13.
You read something else?
I
Demolos.
No, that's all I read from Domelo. That's all from that page. Right. I read out of this first, which is the Christian Science lesson sermon.
That's all that you read?
That's all I read, yeah.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
All right. Well, you're talking about serving with joy. I don't know if any of you have ever listened to Jack Thornton lecture. Have you? Well, some years ago when I was a circulation rep for the Monitor, I was invited to speak at Claremont School in England about my work with the Monitor, and Jack was taking the meeting. And he told us this wonderful story that I love. It's about serving with joy. He said that when he was working for Boston, that one day he was driving to an appointment, and he came to a little town. And he said he had about an hour and a half to spare. And he began to wonder, is there any Christian Science activity in this little town? So he looked up the journal and he found the address of a church, and he went there, but it was all locked up. So then he went to the post office and he asked the man, do you know any Christian Scientists here? So he gave him an address of a woman who got the periodicals through the post. So Jack found her phone number in the book and he called her up and he said, you don't know me, but I'm Jack Thornton and I work at the church center and I'm here for a few hours and I wonder if I could talk to you about Christian Science activity. Could you maybe let me see your little church? She said, no. It's all locked up. And I'm not going down to open all those doors. He said, oh, well, could I come to your home and speak to you? She said, no. He said, well, could you meet me in town? Could we maybe have a cup of coffee or something? I don't drink coffee. He said, well, could you just meet me in the street beside my car? I'd just like to ask you a few questions. So she said, okay. Now, Jack is about 6'4" or something. And he was standing leaning on his car, and he said, up come this little old lady. And she was all bent over. So because there was such a difference in their heights, he sort of kneeled down and put his hands on his knees, and he looked into her face. And he said, tell me, is your church very active? She said, no. She said, do you know that I have 5 jobs in this church? She said, I'm organist, I'm reader, I'm, treasurer. She said, about 5 things she listed. So Jack leaned away over again and he looked into her face and he said, well, aren't you grateful that out of this whole town, God has chosen you to do his special work, has given you 5 jobs? So he said she looked away up at him and she said, yeah. And he said to her, well, honey, you better tell your face and your voice because they haven't got the message. And he said suddenly they both started to laugh, and they laughed so much they were holding each other up in the street. And he got in the car and drove away. About a month later, he got a letter from her that says, "Dear Jack Thornton, I haven't stopped laughing since you left. I do my work with joy, and Jack, I've straightened up." Wasn't that something? So it's doing it with joy, which counts.
Well, what, any questions up here?
You may have to come forward a little bit.
How do you know when you should let something go, the person or something let go, that you can't seem to heal in your thought, and it keeps coming back as aggravating to you or nasty to you or something like that? When do you know when to just, like, the Bible says, give unto Caesar what Caesar's and unto God what is God, and just let go?
Well, there are times when we have to let go. I had to finally let go of my husband, for instance. I had prayed for him for over 30 years, and it never seemed to have any effect. I had left him, and for 16 years I kept bringing him back, hoping that there would be a change. How did I forgive?
I mean, I know you read Signs and Help in the Bible, but when do you really come to that letting go, that forgiveness? And it doesn't seem to be, it seems to take not happen.
Well, it takes a long time. It took me a long time to grow to that. I knew I had to forgive, because Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount said that we have to forgive in order to be called the children of God. So I knew I had to forgive.
And when you shouldn't just let it go away somewhere.
Not until you've forgiven it.
But it's something that should be healed through forgiveness or through your own.
Well, in my case, it wasn't healed to the material senses. You know, people would say, well, it never changed your husband. And it didn't, but boy, it changed me.
That's what I mean. It's the outward appearance.
Yeah. That's right. It didn't change.
But that doesn't always have to be that way.
No, it doesn't.
It's just what's within you?
Well, I think it's within each one of us. If God has told us, the Master has told us that we have to forgive in order to be the children of God, then, I mean, that's an order. So we have to obey that order. And God wouldn't tell you to forgive without giving you the ability to do it. Because that person, no matter how evil they seem to be, is really the victim of the evil. They're not the originator of it. It's handling them.
Do you have any stories about working with the bureaucracy? I find that is a very frustrating thing. In other words, there are established molds for doing everything, and there doesn't seem to be any flexibility in our government or in the institutions that are set up to serve people.
Well, the only story I can think of about that is when I became circulation rep for the Monitor. I lived a long way from the church, and I had been attending our church 15 years and had never been asked to do anything. And one day I asked a member of the board, "Why do you never ask me to do anything?" And she said, "Well, you have 5 children and you live a long way from church." And I said to her, "Well, I think you should let me decide that." So she said, "We will." And the next thing, I got a letter from the board asking me to come and meet them. And this meeting was on a Monday night, and I had to take 2 buses to go there, and all for a couple of days, and all the way on the bus I was saying, "No matter what it is, Father, I'm going to do it, and I'm going to do it with all my heart, because I'm so grateful to serve in the church, to do something." But when I got to the board meeting, they said, "We are very pleased that
that you want to serve in the church, and we have something that we would like you to do. We would like you to be circulation rep for the Christian Science Monitor. And I said, well, I couldn't do that. And they said, why not? And I said, for one thing, I don't subscribe to the Monitor. I can't afford it. It's too American. And I don't like what they're saying about Northern Ireland. And I said another thing, I am not well educated, so I couldn't go out and talk to the public about the Christian Science Monitor. I'm the last person you could choose. So they said, well, we thought you were the right person because you offered. And then the penny dropped. And I said, oh, that's right, Father. I told you that I would do it. Okay, I'll do it. So they said, right, here's a box. We have only ever had two circulation reps in our church, and they never made a success of it. The people in our town are not ready for the Monitor. Here's your box. Don't ask us any questions. It's between you and Boston. There's your box. So all the way home, I sat with this box on my knee in the bus, and I went through it, and it was full of all these flyers of the Monitor at a certain price. So I thought, great, the first thing I'll do is I'll send out all these flyers. And I sent them out, and I got 25 subscriptions. And I couldn't believe it. I thought this was fantastic. And about 3 weeks later, I had a call from Boston, and they said, where did you get those flyers? And I said, our clerk gave them to me. They said, they're 9 years out of date. And the Monitor is now about 3 times that price. But they very kindly said, we are so pleased that you got 25 orders that we are going to honor it. Now, wasn't that nice? That was in the good old days.
That's all one of your tapes, isn't it? Yes.
No, no, not that one.
I heard that before.
Oh, did you? Don't think. Well, I gave that in a talk in San Francisco recently. Were you there? No?
No, this was a while ago.
I don't think so. But there might be tips around I didn't know were around.
Yeah, I think we have one of those.
Is that right?
Yeah, I think we have.
Oh, did you? Oh, well, that's nice.
I heard it. Okay.
Well, that's a tape I haven't got. That's nice.
I love that tape, too.
But, you see, that showed me, anyhow, I was going to tell you the story about the people on my board who didn't want me to go and talk to them. And the Mother Church was saying to me, take this to your board and so forth. And they would say to me, no, we don't want to know. It's nothing to do with us. We're not interested. And so one day I got really frustrated about this. And that was the day that my daughter and I had a row. And I was thinking that she was so unwilling to listen. And I was thinking about the people on the board, and I was thinking, they're so unwilling to listen. And I knew that the opposite of unwilling was willing. So I looked it up in the dictionary, and it said, not slow, lazy, or reluctant, quick to act, prompt to do, ready to respond. And I saw that's how man is. Man is the reflection of God's being. Therefore, he is quick to act, prompt to do, ready to respond. That included my daughter. That included the people on my board. And the next night, I went to church, and one of the board members came up, and she said, I'm sure you think we are very unwilling to cooperate with you. We would like you to come to a meeting of the board and tell us your activities and what you've been doing. And they allowed me to set up a fund for postage and so forth. So that was how I handled it in that case. You handle anything through love. And it healed my daughter on that day. She had a lovely healing of that too. That's in one of my lectures, and I think you heard that one. Forget which one it's in. Do you know, Martha?
No.
Maybe it's not in one. Yes. She was She turned 15, and she just discovered boys. And she thought boys were the greatest things in sliced bread. And she didn't want to do her homework or clean her bedroom or do anything. Just boys, boys, boys. And go to her friend's house and play records. Or a friend would come to our house. And I had tried very hard to talk to her about this, but wasn't getting anywhere. So one morning, I was calling her to get up for school. And she lived away in the attic, three stories up. And I was shouting, "Are you up?" And she was saying, "I am up. I am up." But after a while, I couldn't hear a sound from upstairs. And I went up the stairs three at a time. Got into her room. Her school uniform and all her clothes were all over the floor. Her radio was going full blast. She was on her knees in the bed. She had a pillow over her head and she was going like this to the music in the bed. And I screamed at her. Well, she jumped so hard, she hit her head on the sloping roof. She ran down into the bathroom and locked herself in, and I was banging on the door and said, "Just wait till you come home today, my girl. I'm going to put a stop to all this. I'll have peace in my home. I'm not going to have this." Well, she ran out of school, no breakfast, in tears. And I came into the sitting room. The three younger kids were desperately trying to get out of my road. They were all getting on their coats, their jackets, their school bag. And even the dog had crawled under the seat. So when they all went out, I sat down and I shed a few tears. And I said, "Father, I might as well be the woman next door. Because I'm not praying like a Christian scientist or handling this. I am trying to stop a war in my community, but I'm negotiating my own little war in here. Show me how to defuse the situation and how to stop this." So I sat and listened, and suddenly the thought came to me, it's me, O Lord, standing in the need of prayer. Not my brother, not my sister. It's me, O Lord. And I realized that it really was me who was in need of prayer and not that child, because I could only see her as a rebellious teenager who needed to be taught a lesson. And all these lovely thoughts kept pouring into my thought that she was really God's child and she was made in his exact image and likeness, so she was good. But then these other thoughts would niggle and say, "But she's so unwilling." And then I looked up the word willing, not slow, lazy, or reluctant, quick to act, prompt to do, ready to respond. And I knew that as a reflection, that's how God does it. If I looked in the mirror and lifted my arm, my reflection lifted its arm. We did everything together. And that's how she was as God's child. And when she came home in the afternoon, she put her arms around me, she apologized, and straight upstairs and cleaned her room, and that was the end of the problem. Well, and how to pray about it and what it's all about. And remember, you are in the middle of church.